Welcome back to the Fish Tank right here on the Miami Dolphins Podcast Network. Seth Levitt with none other than the Juice. OJ, how you doing, man?
What's up, Big Seth?
I'm just admiring that background. I love seeing that 81. I wish we could see it out on the field a little bit more.
But, yeah, you know what, man?
Doing okay?
I don't want to see it on the field. This should be tired, man.
It looks good.
Right where it's at. It should be hanging on my wall. That's it.
On the mantle with that trophy. I see the poker trophy.
First annual.
You got everything going on over there.
That's right. Hey, man. You know, I only got a couple awards in my life, man. I got to show them proudly. You
only
know
a
what I mean?
Couple?
Yeah, that's it.
I love the modesty. Well, Juice is in the house. DJ Preach, of course, in the house. Leon is somewhere hiding in the shadows in the house. And our guest today is a guy that we've been trying to get on, but, you know, he's a busy dude. He was getting
busy.
14th college degree. He had gone back to school. He always has something going on, whether it's in the community, whether the Dolphins have him working. But the great Tuan Russell is diving into the tank. Tuan, how are you, sir?
I am doing well.
Already?
Oh, man. We just started.
Might get uncomfortable with that. I know the two of y'all. I mean, we got some history between the two of y'all now.
Yeah. There's definitely some history. You know what? That's not even the notes, but we're going to – we have to talk about that in a minute
here.
He poked the bear already.
Before
we get into the Dolphin years and the pro career of Tuan, Juice, you know, I grew up down here, and I am older than Tuan. I'm sure he would say that, so I'll just preempt that. I am older than Tuan, but only by a year. But you could not have attended high school in Broward County and cared about sports and not known the name Tuan Russell. And I hate to blow up his head this early in the show, but I mean, he was a legendary.
Like it's already blown up, man. Look at that. It's already blown up.
He does have the high top fade going today. So there's a
play in the house.
Throwback to the 90s. But, you know, we're talking on track and field, certainly football with a great program at St. Thomas, which was like a small college program. Well, probably still is.
Yeah.
But Tuan had an unbelievable high school career. Broward County College High School Athlete of the Year, senior year. Is that right, Tuan?
Yeah, I honestly didn't even realize I got the Broward County Athlete of the Year. And I was looking at some notes a few years ago. I was like, man, I won that. I was like, where's my trophy?
Look at the modesty today, Preach. All these guys.
Call somebody and get my trophy.
Knock the dust off that thing.
Tough to get it now.
The dust off that thing.
When you're 18, that stuff don't mean anything. But when you're 46, those awards. You know, funny story about 10 years ago, my son, he's 18 now. So he's seven or eight at the time. He said, hey, Daddy, you really play football? Because Mommy said you play football. Everybody else always asking for your autograph. I ain't never seen you play football.
He ain't buying it because he didn't see it.
Yeah, right. So I had to go back into the archives and pull out some
VHSs.
Yeah. And some DVDs. And it was one of the coolest times. He's like, oh, Daddy, you did play. So I wish I could find some of my high school stuff. That'll blow his mind.
Well, you know, Seth, he's also a member of one of the Broward County Sports Hall of Fame as well. So, yeah, so that tells you his prowess as an athlete down here.
Yeah, so I was a Piper guy. Tuan, where would you have gone to high school if you had not received an academic scholarship to St. Thomas? What public high school would you have been zoned for?
First of all, who says I got a scholarship? I mean, you're implying that I received a scholarship. You don't get scholarships in high school.
Financial aid.
Allegedly. So
I grew up in Lauderdale Lakes. I grew up in Lauderdale Lakes off of 21st Street, and I would have went to Boyd Anderson.
You would have been a BA. Yeah. Okay.
But at the time, my dad, honestly, the only reason I went to St. Thomas, my dad was a high school football coach at Ely High School. And he still to this date is the winningest high school football coach at Ely. So he left, and when he left high school football, he did not want to send his sons to schools that he played against.
Did he coach that?
He didn't know how that was going to go. So my older brothers ended up going to St. Thomas, and I just followed suit. So that's how I went. So, you know, just so you know. I don't want you to think that.
You don't have to defend your decision making.
You kind of implied something else.
So it's so different now, but in those days, the public school guys really did not like the fact that guys that they grew up with and played with and Optimus Ball and the whole thing, and then all of a sudden they're all, you know, I mean, that team that you guys had at St. Thomas, with Daryl, right? Daryl Porter was on that team.
Daryl Porter, Key Books, and Cameron Davis.
Cameron Davis. Yeah. That was a grown man.
Cameron was probably the best football player on the entire my entire team. He wasn't the best football player the entire 4 years I was there. That was probably Sterling Palmer, who went to Florida State. But Cameron was 6'6", 260 in high school.
In high school, Juice. And, it was craziness.
And looked like Jason Taylor. I mean, built like that. Like, in high school.
Yeah. Grown man stuff.
It was absolute craziness. And again, as a Piper guy, I think Daryl would have been a Piper guy. There were a handful of those players that were really quality football players.
He wouldn't have went to Piper, though. Nobody
well, he wouldn't Piper. Have, but he should have been zoned for Piper. You no know, the days of the Piper Blades brothers. And
damn. Shots Piper fired. Got a good golf team?
I mean, he's not. No. The Piper right. had nothing. No, actually, nothing. Our basketball team during that time was decent. But anyway, I don't want to get caught up in all of that.
One more thing. You know what Piper did have, though, Juice?
Oh, here we go.
You know what Piper really had, though?
Uh-oh. Here we go.
Here they come.
Piper had an unbelievable diverse population. And if you were looking for a wife, Piper was the place you would go.
Baskin Robbins, huh?
He's leaning somewhere. He's leaning somewhere, Jensen. Right. We're going to hope to. So we're going to steer out of this through, you know. We are definitely going to steer away from this. So obviously, great high school career. Went to the U. He's made that very clear. He's established that here. And just because I've written this for me to ask the first question, we're gonna move past the U experience pretty quickly. But there was a story told in the tank by David Bowens. Right? Debo was in the tank. And Debo said he was a heavily recruited athlete out of Michigan and had a visit to the University of Miami. Do you remember this story? Because he said he had a run-in at a party, and it did not go his way.
Man, yeah, it's funny. I don't know what year I was. I don't know if I think I might have been a redshirt sophomore or something like that. And Debo came in, and coach was like, hey, take care of this guy. Like, this is a guy we really want. Yeah, like this is a guy.
You didn't you didn't clarify what he meant by take care of him, like bury him in the backyard.
No, he said make sure that he has a good time. This is a guy that we want. He can help the football team. So he comes on the visit, and we just happened to be having a party at our house that weekend.
Just happened.
I mean,
happened.
We had parties every weekend. We had the party house. We had a place in Perron, and every other weekend we charging $5 a head.
you were charging a cover.
Yeah, you know, it was free food and, you know.
Good times.
Yeah.
Okay.
Free spirits. Fun. So he came and he's hanging out. The party was great. And after the party, he started like, he got, you know, I guess he had a couple of drinks. He just started talking stuff like, I'm going to come to UM and I'm taking all y'all jobs. I'm from Michigan. You suck. You suck and you suck. Wow. You don't even look like you playing football. Now he's talking to me, like, because I'm the littlest one there. So he's like, you don't even look like you can play linebacker. I can play linebacker. I can play DN. I mean, he is going off of me. So I'm like, so first I get annoyed. I say, hey, man, you don't even know me like that. I don't need to know you. I'm coming to the U and I'm taking your job. I said, that's fine. So he started talking. Then he started talking about, I'll drink you. Now, I don't even drink.
He didn't know that.
No, he didn't know that. I mean, I'm not saying I never had a drink, but I wasn't a drinker. That wasn't right. My thing. And he's like, I'll drink you. I drink you on the table just like I'll whoop you on football. I said, I bet you can't. Now, everybody's looking at me like, why is Twan saying this? Like, he don't even drink like that. Like, how is he going to outdrink this guy? So I said, you stay here. I'm going to get the drink. So we just had the party. So we had some full and empty vodka bottles. So there was one had like maybe like this much in it, and the other one was almost full. So I consolidated one, and I went to my trusty faucet. I'm used to drinking water.
That water, yeah.
So
yeah.
I put that water in the vodka bottle. Man. So
your bottle.
I had no idea how this was gonna go.
No idea, Twan.
I mean,
I had a little idea.
Well, I didn't think it was going to go that far, you know, so I bring the bottles to the table, make sure I line them up appropriately. I communicate to my buddies what was going on. And then we you know, rock, paper, scissors to see who went first. I won. I mean, I lost, so I had to go first. So I poured a tall red cup. Poured it in there. I was like, oh. It burned my chest.
Coral Gables tap water will get you, huh?
That went on for a couple minutes.
Yeah, sounded like it.
And he had enough. I definitely won the battle. And I took him back to his hotel. I took him back to his hotel. We got him up to his room. And we made sure he was safe. And he woke up, he came in the next day, and I never saw him again until, yeah. I mean, it had to be 5 years, six, I mean, maybe even 7 years later.
Yeah.
We're literally sitting in the locker room. He just came
in. Miami now. Back in Miami, yeah, just I'm, not UM's locker room.
Right. It was Dolphins locker room. And I'm actually sitting, like, it's Derek Rogers. It's me and Zach Thomas to my left. So we all just chopping it up, talking trash, hanging out. And you see Debo in the distance. I think he had been with us for like 2 days. Like, I hadn't even met him yet. And he's staring at me like this, like mean mugging me. Like, really? I mean, and yeah, I.
And you hadn't made the connection, Vaughn? You didn't realize
had,
the same
I
thing?
I had not made the connection or anything. So I say, Derek, is he looking at me? Like, what's. He's like, I said, I don't know. He's looking at one of us. And I was like, and I look back, I'm like, and I kind of give him like, what up? And he stood up, and Derek kind of grabbed my arm. I was like, what's wrong with this cat? I was like, at first I was like, he's joking. Like, I was like, well, he's joking. I'm standing up like as a joke, like, what's up? You know, like joking. And then he started
talking
coming.
More.
I said, Derek, this dude's serious. I said, what's up? So I kind of braced myself. And as he crosses the middle of the locker room, he goes, are you Twan Russell?
I love it.
I said, yeah. I've been looking for you. And he dropped the year, the time, the date. I mean, he said, looking for you. And he belts out something. And I was like, oh. Sorry. I think because I was so apologetic that it didn't go any further. I was just like, man, I'm sorry, dog. Like, I am so sorry. Honestly, you were being a jerk and I should have let it ride. And I did.
I was
immature. And literally we told the story in front of everybody at that moment. We started reliving it. It was the craziest thing. And honestly, that's I thought hilarious. He's going to, I really did. I mean, cause you know, Debo is a good looking dude. Come to, physical ability. I was all of 212 pounds. I mean,
because he's a D end at that point. He's not a linebacker. I mean, I guess he could have been a stand up linebacker, but there was a reason he was on the other side of the locker room because he was with the correct. Defensive lineman. Yeah, yeah, makes sense.
He was D-line.
Big cat.
I thought he was gonna whoop me. I really did. I mean, I was looking around, saying where my helmet's at. You know, who I have in my hip pocket. Who's gonna help pull this cat off of me? Because I'm not gonna back down.
Man, oh man, yeah, five years it. Of beef. He was holding that in for
was,
a long time.
Yeah, probably he was really motivation. Carrying that with him.
But he came across the locker room like he was, you know, pass rushing on an offensive tackle. I mean, I literally thought this thing was going to get serious. I mean, he power pressed that dude and ripped, you know, he was trying to get to me. I mean, because by this time, people had kind of walked in front of him because people said, wait, this guy's real. Look. So
other people in the locker room are hearing it. So it's not just, you know, it's not just you and Derek and Zach and him. Like, it's starting to attract a little attention now.
Yeah, the only person they're trying to pull back is him because I wanted none of that heat.
Right.
They weren't worried about it. They were protecting you. They was
your boys. That's what your boys are for.
That's great.
I didn't
want to hear that. So let's go back a little bit before that time. You know, you talk about going to the U, but, you know, in 97, you got drafted by the Washington football team. From what I understand, you know, there might have been a little confusion there, though. Like, they thought they were actually selecting somebody different, maybe. Tell me about that a little bit.
So,
or somebody else, no. I should say, huh?
So when I got drafted, you know, it was a stressful day, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So, my agent was Alan Herman, and he was a good dude. And the only reason I picked him is because he was realistic with me. Some guys would say, man, you a second, third round pick. And Alan, I remember him coming in and saying, hey, Twan, like, I've talked to scouts to say you can go in the third round. I've talked to scouts to say you may not get drafted. So he's like, you're all over the place because your body type is smaller than the average guy, but you're fast. So a lot of people are looking at you differently. And he says, you know, just be patient on draft day. So I was ready for the long haul. So day one starts. I have my family there. We eating pizza, hanging out, mom there. And it's first round. I knew I had no chance. Second round, knew I had no chance. But third round, I said, well, there's a possibility that somebody might be interested. A couple guys called the agent who's like, hey, you know what? We might have a pick. We're looking at Twan. We don't know. We may take him in the third round. So we get a call from the Detroit Lions. And I think it was picked like 129 or 130. And the guy picks up the phone and says, hey, Twan, we're going to take you with our next pick. And I was like, okay. He's like, yeah, you ready? You ready to be a Detroit Lion? Absolutely, absolutely. He said, I'm going to have coach call you in a couple minutes. And make sure you watch some television because you're going to see your name. So I'm all excited. Man, we high-fiving around the house. Everybody good. Mama, I'm going to the NFL. Like, we having a good time. So we watching the TV. Detroit Lions select with the 130th pick, Matt Russell.
I love it.
I ain't trying, like, can you imagine? Like, I'm sitting there.
How surprised was Matt Russell when his name got called? He's like, I didn't get a call from anybody or anything.
I'm sitting there, and I remember thinking, like, man, this messed up. And the only thing that hurt my heart that day, I have a little niece. And she's like one of my favorite nieces. I tell her all the time, like, I still apologize to her this day. She didn't know any better. She like 4 or 5 years old. She walks up to me because I done walked to the other room. I done got found my quiet place. I'm in a funky mood. And she come in there and she said, Uncle, you going to be all right? Get away from me. And she might have, because of the way I said it, she might have kind of stumbled and fell on her butt because I said it so loud.
Wait a minute.
Because I was like, get away from me. She was like, and then she kind of, and I went and picked her up. And I felt, actually, that moment made me realize that I was being an idiot. And I picked her up and I held her and we're good for the rest of the day. But, I mean, it was bad, man. And then the Redskins took me, I think, in the fifth round, like 244. And, you know, I was able to play in the NFL for 7 years. But I say getting there was kind of funky.
Yeah,
that's a great.
And so, did you and Matt Russell ever talk about this? Did you ever connect with Matt Russell?
You know, I bumped into him because he's a scout now, so he scouts all over. So I bumped into him at the combine once, and we just kind of laughed about it. He had no idea. He didn't know.
Right, he didn't know that side of it, did he?
It makes me wonder who they really wanted. You know what I'm saying? Like, did they call you by accident, or did they select? When they got him, they wanted. Somebody just called the wrong guy.
They wanted a grown man. Matt was, you know, 6'2", 245. Quan Russell was 6'2", 216.
With 5 pound weights in both pockets. I love it. Yeah. I love it.
You know, throughout your whole career, man, and definitely in retirement, you know, you've been known as a leader in the community, you know, particularly with your work with your foundation. We know we both embrace and I love your foundation and what you do. But doing the math, I mean, you know, you had your foundation while you were in Washington, correct?
Yeah. I started my foundation in 1998, the concept started. My mom and I were sitting at the kitchen counter and we were saying, I was like, Mom, I want to do something. She said, you know, baby, I've been praying about it. I want to do something too. So we said, let's do this after school program. Had no idea what we wanted to do. And we just jotted down some things on the paper. So we started in a church, a small little church in Fort Lauderdale. And we met every Tuesday night and kids would come and we had had teachers volunteering. And it was real simple. So in 99, I said, Mom, we should formalize this. Let's open up a foundation. Let's formally do it. And I didn't really know where I wanted to do it at, but we definitely wanted to do it in Florida. Depending on what happened in Washington, we potentially would have done it in Washington because Daryl Green at the time had a foundation and he really helped me understand what it meant. So he gave me tours of the foundation. I met with the staff. So in the early stages, I met with his team to kind of formalize what direction I wanted to go with. So in casual conversation, I think Daryl and I was talking, the general manager had found out that I was starting this foundation. And as the foundation was progressing, you know, we didn't even have anything to do except for I'm doing tours with Daryl's organization. My exit meeting before we went to the offseason with the Redskins, I was told, like, hey, you know, we don't know if you're serious about football because you're starting this foundation. And, wow. You know, now, granted, I wasn't a starter. You know, I'm not going to sit here and say I was like a world beater when it came to linebacker. But I played nickel. I started on nickel. I played every play on special teams. You know, I got all my incentives that I could have received on special teams plays. So, I was a team captain on special teams that year. And I thought it was a good chance for me to stay. Now, I got injured like the 10th or 11th game that year, so I didn't finish the season. But I was surprised that he would even care that I was starting the foundation. I mean, it was not taking any of my time. I mean, I spent a lot of time in the room studying and all that stuff and doing that. During those days, man, it was different. It wasn't, hey, go back to school and finish college. It wasn't make sure you're preparing yourself for your future. If you're not focusing on football, if you had any other interests outside of football, you weren't taking football serious. And when he made that statement, I think he just kind of lumped me into whatever his perception was of a football player wanted to advance himself or help his community beyond what was going on in the building. And that was a criticism. I mean, and now at the same token, the beginning of that conversation is, hey, we love what you did on special teams wise. We thought you have a lot of upside, you know, playing linebacker. You need to gain some weight. You need to get stronger. We think you can be a guy that plays for us for a long time. And then he closed with, but we're not sure if you're serious about football because you have these other interests, these other business interests. And I mean, to this day, that conversation bothered me. Like, it really kind of bugged me. And I don't even know why I even went that direction.
You know what, Twan, man, there's so many other guys too that actually start business while they're in the league. And it's really important for those guys to not wait until they're done with football to start figuring out what their future is going to be. So I don't get that either, man. Yeah, that makes no sense to me, especially somebody that's going to start a foundation that's going to, you know, benefit kids. And real quick, a little bit more about your foundation. You know, I always hear your motto, if you teach a kid to read, what's the rest of that?
They can read for the rest of their lives.
Right.
I mean, absolutely. Because it's, you know, the way our school system is set up from the time their child is born to the time they're in third grade, the purpose is to teach them the fundamentals of reading and writing. And from fourth grade on, kids should be reading to learn. What's happening is so many of our kids are not proficient in reading by the time they're in third grade. So they're still learning how to read, sometimes all the way into college. I mean, I was one of those kids where I could have been a better student, I think, early on, and that would have helped me later.
Yeah, should have gone to Piper.
I had some great teachers that helped me later on in my life, but it's, you know, it's just about understanding the fundamentals of reading and writing. And the more we can make kids do that, the better we are. And actually, both of you, we've partnered with our foundations and, you know, yep, in different capacities. And Juice had a center and Seth had a center. And I mean, Seth's
JT. I just send emails back and forth.
Jay, I mean, when I say Seth, I'm saying JT. So I'm saying right.
No, we you know what? I really enjoyed the process of working and learning about the work that you did. And Juice, I remember Twan on the walking up and down the charters and let me get your candy. Let me get your chips. And he would get everybody's snacks that were on the charters and use them as incentives in the reading room. And that's
right.
What's he doing over there? And interestingly enough, we just had Dave Hyde in the tank. And Dave, I think, wrote a really nice piece about your work. And so we did some exploratory work here and started talking to Twan. And yeah, we were able to build out the Jason Taylor Reading Room. And you guys were a huge, huge part of that.
Your center is like the model center of what a center should look like. And it's, yeah, you guys have done an amazing job, I mean, between you and JT and keeping that going.
It's nice stuff, to say. Man. You teed it up for us, Twan.
That's right. Twan, you know, you touched on a little bit about your prowess as a special teams guy, you know, being the size you were, but tough as hell and fast. You know, your first year here happened to be down here in Miami, happened to be the final season for one of my favorite coaches of all time, legendary special teams coach, and, you know, Mike Westhoff. How did you and Mike get along? You know, were there any awkward moments or, you know, anything that went on? But I got along with Mike very well because he got me in the end zone a few times. How did you get along with Mike?
I mean, I love Mike. I mean, honestly, he taught me more in the short time I was with him than any other special teams coach that I have ever played with ever in my life. I mean, he broke special teams down to parts. When I first met him, he actually brought me out. When I left Washington and I took my visit to Miami, he took me to Mariano's, I think, the Italian restaurant off of US.
Mariano's on Oakland. Yeah.
Yeah. So we were sitting down this thing and he was like, even at that moment, he was analyzing what kind of person I was. Because for him, it was about football ability, but it was also about that heart. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to see, like, he was asking these strange questions, and it was really just to analyze, could he play for me? And he was putting me in, even in that moment, he was putting me in these uncomfortable situations, these awkward situations. Like, I said something stupid. I'll never forget. Probably one of the stupid things I ever said. I go,
this ought to be good.
We'll be the judge of that.
Yeah. I didn't really know a whole lot about the Pro Bowl and all that stuff, right? So, and when I was in Washington, you know how they have the Pro Bowl ballots and stuff? I didn't know they put all the special teams players on the Pro Bowl ballots, and then you vote. I thought they narrowed them down, and then people voted from there. I just didn't know any better, right? So he goes, I goes, yeah. You know, he says, so you see, he asked a question. I said, yeah, you know, I've had, you know, I think the last couple of years, you know, I was on a Pro Bowl ballot, and I was considering. He goes, you?
Pro Bowl? That's right. That's right.
No, I see those Pro Bowl ballots. You were never considered. I said, well, I saw my name on it. He's like, everybody's on them.
That's right.
Nothing special about that moment for you.
That's right. He does not mince words, does he?
I felt so small.
Oh, that's hilarious.
But after that meeting, like he said something to me that really made me want to play for the Dolphins. He goes, hey, you know, I've watched you since you were in high school, and I'm honored if you would come here. Like he said, I think you got what it takes to play for me. And I've just never had a coach specifically about special teams tell me that. I know I've had coaches talking about linebacker, but it was exciting to play for someone who loves special teams to that level. And when I came on, he taught me how to watch film from a special teams perspective, how to see two or three rows ahead. Like when you're running down the field, how do you see beyond what's in front of you? How do you quickly make decisions? How do you look at angles of shoulders and how people drop in their weight so you can determine what you're going to do well before they even react? And awesome. I think that helped elevate me to be a good special teams player. I was fast. I thought I was strong when I was moving fast. I wasn't very strong if I was standing still. But when I was fast running, I played with strength. And he put me into some very good positions to make plays. And there was one, you know, it's my funniest story about him. There was one week where, I mean, we're playing the Jets. It was late in the season. And they did these double crosses. So they would run the tackle and the guard to go inside, and the guy would loop around. Normally, we would watch that in film, but he wasn't able to get to it. He told us about, hey, guys, I got one other thing. We're going to walk it through on the field. So we get on the field, and I guess we were tight for time. And Juan says, like, let's go. And all of a sudden, we're in like team where we're hitting. And now I see it for the first time. So the two guys looped around, and I'm supposed to be working with the tackle. Well, I missed it. You know, I just, first time I saw it, I missed it. Dadgummit, Twan, you better get there right next time. So I said, okay, you know, he didn't say dadgummit. You know, he had his choice words in there.
Not Mike. He's not a dadgummit guy for sure.
So they run it again the next time. So this time, I'm thinking he ran it the same way. So he ran it opposite, the same thing away from me. I messed up again. He said, Twan, you get this wrong one bloop, 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 bloop more time, I'm going to send your bloop, 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 bloop back to St. Thomas where you belong. I ain't gonna lie, man. That really.
Daddy watched it in high school, so we knew exactly where to ship you.
Yeah, I'm only 15 minutes away. So he said that, and literally, like, now everybody on the sideline, because you got the offensive defense on the side, everybody looking at me. I messed up twice in a row, and now he embarrassed me. So now I'm pissed off. I'm real mad. Like, so I turn and look at him like this. I'm just staring. I turn around. I'm looking at him. And all of a sudden, he said, okay, let's go. I'm still looking at him. Ready, set. They snap the ball. I'm still looking at him. They punt the ball. I'm still looking at him. Because at that point, my man who was on the line, like, I couldn't turn. Like, we were staring at each other, everybody watching me, and he had already punked me three times in a row. I'm like, what am I going to do? So I'm sitting there like, okay, I'm just going to stay there and not do anything. And
I'm trying to wonder what result you were hoping to get by blowing this play off and staring the coach.
Well, he ran down the field. Well, not him. The team ran down the field, and they were jogging back. Me and him are still staring at one another. And Juan said, y'all two finish? Y'all two finish? All right, let's get back to practice. And we went all back to practice. And at the end of the practice, he walked up to me, tapped me on my butt and said, hey, you weren't fighting, didn't you?
I love it.
All right, so you held your ground. I guess you gave him what he was looking for.
I probably should have got cut.
Well, you didn't shake his hand, so you were in good shape. There
it is. So listen, we cannot talk about special teams play in that era and ignore another guy who was in that room your first year with the Dolphins. And he was a guest here in the tank recently as well, Larry Izzo. And with you and Larry both being linebackers, both being special teams guys, I mean, there had to be some stories. Talk about what it was like working with Izzo, both on the field and maybe off the field.
Larry's awesome, by the way. I mean, like, he's absolutely amazing. Like, he kept the linebacker room fresh. I mean, he was the only guy that could say crazy stuff and nobody would say anything. Like, he was amazing. Like, we used to have a cuss jar. And I mean, in our meeting, if you cursed, you had to pay like $1. And there was like, if you said, you know, one cuss word, maybe $1. If it was like a real hardcore bad word, it would be $5. So he got mad because he's like, man, Twan's not contributing. Why I didn't cuss? I mean, what do you want me to do? So
he was contributing plenty.
Oh, he was contributing.
He was probably plenty. Carrying it.
So he changed the rules. He said, okay, if you curse or fart.
That probably makes sense.
He said, if you curse or fart, you had to contribute.
And you went bankrupt.
I did. I mean, I was a
fiber guy.
Party was like $5.
You know? Well, not a fiber guy.
Fiber.
Oh, fiber guy.
Yeah, I was definitely a fiber guy. So at the end of the season, he took all the money. We had like $2,500 in this.
Damn.
Star. I mean, it was a lot of money because, I mean, we had some characters.
Did Mike have to contribute to the cuss jar too?
Oh, no. This is the linebacker
room, not the linebacker room. Yeah, my bad.
I think Bob Sanders.
Yeah, so he probably wasn't terrible.
Was it Bob Sanders? It might have been Randy Shannon, my first. Yeah, it might have been Randy. And at the end of it, he said, hey, let's buy some raffle tickets. I'm like, raffle tickets? Like, who want to buy some raffle tickets? He's like, yeah, let's buy some raffle. So everybody agreed.
Raffle tickets are like lotto tickets. Like, what raffle?
Lotto tickets. Florida lotto tickets. I'm sorry. Okay. Florida lotto
tickets.
That's
all right. Well, I thought you were selling them the Russell Reading Room.
That would be pretty cool.
Fundraising. Yeah.
So he brought some lotto tickets, and he bought $2,500 of lotto tickets. First of all, I was complaining because he needs to bring us and let everybody see, you know, the lotto tickets.
Yeah, like no in a corporate setting, when you do that, they sit the printout and they give you all the numbers and everybody knows what tickets.
But no one ever saw it. No one ever actually saw the sheet. That sheet it has been lost since 2000. I'm still looking for the sheet. He might have won.
Hey, sorry guys, we didn't win. $2,500 tickets, we didn't win anything.
He might have won. Time. Like, we don't know. Because can't you win like partial amounts like in lotto? Like,
yeah.
$5 up to whatever the jackpot.
You can win hundreds of thousands of dollars and not win the big pot.
We bought 25. You're going to tell me we didn't win $500? Like, we could have won something. So that was
probably. Nobody ever asked. What, like, what was he saying? I'll bring it tomorrow?
It was Larry. It was the end of the season. I mean,
there you go.
I love it. Oh, that's true. That's right. He was done.
Yeah, once you leave, it's over.
And he probably lost it in that bet at the elbow room, Juice, where he nearly drowned. That's probably what happened to it.
Oh,
on the field? Like when you guys were, you know, I don't know enough about it, who was playing what position, but what was that like playing with his? I mean, you know, you're talking.
He was shady. He was shady. He knew he was shady. Larry knew he was shady. When we run down the kickoffs, because, you know, different weeks we would have an emphasis who's gonna break the wedge.
Oh yeah.
So Larry used the excuse, well, Twan's faster than me, so he's gonna get there first. Let him break the wedge, and I'll fall in behind. But I'm running from I'm all the way on the left side of the field. They run the wedge to him on the right side of the field. So I'm taking 20 more steps than him to get to the same spot.
Are you 20 steps faster than him?
No, he just slows down. Like, he's smart. Like, I can't hate him for it. He slowed down just a nudge and said, let Twan hit the wedge and get knocked out. And he just kind of stayed right behind. He would make the tackle. And that's how he would get me every year. That's how he actually beat me. I think we were close. He might have beat me the year we played together, tackle-wise, because he would slow down just before contact.
So I didn't know this till we interviewed Iz. And, you know, Iz is one of my closest friends that I've ever worked with in the team. But he has the most recorded special teams tackles in the history of the NFL. You know, and you think about, I mean, he's played on a lot of successful teams and had a long career and was a hell of a player. But now we're finding out that there might have been a little secret sauce that he had.
This is brilliance. I mean, because he is very football smart. Like, I say shady sarcastically, but he was smart. I'll tell you, he read punt returns better than kickoff returns better than anybody I've ever seen. Like, the nuances of his moves. Like, when you look at him, you say, he's not the fastest guy. He's not the biggest guy. He's not the strongest guy. But intellectually, he understood patterns. Like, he was really good at understanding the patterns and how to fit, how his talent level fit into the schemes. And he did a really good job of saying, okay, if I'm on the right side, I know I have these guys and they're going to fit this way if they do their jobs the right way. And he would fall into these little rhythms, and he did a really good job of making tackle. It's cool. Still shady, though.
I love it.
You know, obviously we're talking a lot about special teams play for, you know, both you and Izzo, and, you know, you also played the linebacker position. You know, during the 3 years you were there, though, there's one guy there, 54, that obviously was the man in that locker room, Zach Thomas. What did you think about Zach before you got in there with him? And, you know, what impression did he make on you, Twan? I mean, obviously he was a hell of a player. What kind of a teammate, and how was he in that room with the cuss jar and all that stuff going on?
You know, before I met Zach formally, I just assumed, I mean, I never looked at his stats. I just assumed he was like a 6'2", 6'3", linebacker, you know, 240 guy because of the way he played. I mean, on film, you can't really tell his size. And, I mean, he played with such intensity and such fury. So when I walked in, like, my locker was in between Derek Rogers and Zach Thomas. So he was one of the first people that I saw when I walked in. I shook his hand and said hello to him. He introduced himself to Zach Thomas. And I remember thinking, like, at simultaneously, like, wow, okay. I mean, I sized him up a little bit. You know what I mean? Like,
Like Debo sized your ass up. That's what you were doing.
No. When Debo looked at me, he had won the fight before we even. So I looked at him. I was like, okay, like maybe. And honestly, it wasn't really as much as me saying that I could be better than Zach. It was more me saying, okay, if he can play in this defense, my body type can play in this defense too. So I looked at it like, okay, you know, this is why they brought me in. I can fit in similar to him. And now I was never a starter at the Dolphins, but I had the ability to start a handful of times. And in the time that I remember the first time that I started linebacker, Zach said, hey, man, can you meet me for film? I said, yeah. So he wasn't playing. I think he was out for a few weeks. So I met him one night. And literally, I'm thinking we're going to be in there for like 30 minutes. We're in there at like 9:30 at night. And he was breaking film down in a way that I had just never done it before. And then I noticed something the following day. He walked up to the coach. I forget who the coach was. I remember him walking up to the coach and said, hey, coach, here's my notes from last night. Just wanted to see, you know, wanted you to look at them. Wow. And then the coach said, yeah, I'll have mine. And I'm going to give you guys mine in the meeting. And it was interesting, that dynamic, like, okay, he's operating as if he's a coach. He's breaking down the film as if it's his job to give the game plan. And I had never done that before. I was just a film watcher making notes on, you know, offensive linemen and how our scheme. He went a step beyond saying, okay, here's how I think we can win. This is what we should do. This is what defenses that can win against our offense. And I had never looked at it that way. And that week, he broke down play by play, by position, what they did on each yard line, when it's fourth and if on what down. And he gave that report to me. Like he did, he wasn't even playing. He broke that down and gave it to me and said, hey, Twan, make sure you study this. This is going to help you in the game. And I've never had more respect for a football player ever in my life until that moment. And he literally said, hey, I want you to be successful this weekend. Look at it. If you have any questions, come back to me. He gave that to me on like on Wednesday when we came back off of our day off. So I had a couple of days to talk to him about it. And I'll tell you, that's why he was successful. He played football from here. And he just had his I call it the big muscle, his heart. He had a heart of a god. Like he could literally like will and beat his body into doing whatever he wanted to do. And he had the brilliance to get there faster than everybody else. So whatever he lost from a speed standpoint or from a size standpoint, he gained with his brilliance. And that's why he's one of the greatest linebackers I've ever been around. And he's probably one of the greatest linebackers in the National Football League ever. And it's a shame that everybody doesn't recognize it.
I think his time's coming. I think he's getting closer to where we all would like to see him, you know, enshrined in Canton for sure. But that's an awesome story. When he gave you that report, and this is, I mean, Juice would have a greater appreciation for this than I just can't comprehend not having played. But did you then, in studying that, did you start to see these things come to fruition? I mean, Channing tells an amazing story of where Zach said, hey, if this guy, you know, if this tight end crosses over, it's going to be this. And it was because the offensive coordinator had, you know, 5 years prior at another team, and Zach had broken down that film and knew that was the scheme that he ran. Did you start to see these things? And we were like, holy shit, like this is.
I did. I don't know if it was the first time he gave it to me, because it was a lot. It was over. At first, it was overwhelming for me. It was a lot of information. I had never thought about football to that level. I mean, to be honest with you. So the more I'd start doing what he was doing, the more comfortable I got with using the information, because it was, so it was a process. I can't say I stepped on the football field and all of a sudden I saw the same rhythms. But as the years went on, I definitely became a much better football player because of the things that he taught me.
That's awesome. Well, there's another guy that was in that room, Juice, and you've mentioned him a couple times, and that's Derek Rogers. And just Derek, just a wonderful, wonderful human being, and has a unique story as well. I can't wait to get Derek in the tank. But, you know, that was a tight-knit group. You guys were a tight-knit group of linebackers. And right around that time, I remember Derek got married. I know Juice and I sat at the same table. I think Woody, there were a handful of us all there. I don't remember seeing you there, Juan. Yeah. How'd you miss my man's wedding?
Yeah, that's a crazy story. Like, I thought I was going to die. that got serious. So we
at the wedding, or
no, it wasn't at the wedding. It was Finn's weekend. So you know, that same weekend, I don't know if you remember, they had Finn's weekend, and a lot of guys, they had a car for us. Once we finished, they're gonna take us to the hotel, we shower, and we'll be able to go to the wedding. So my boat left out like 5 o'clock in the morning. We're out on the boat and we're fishing, and we're a few miles off away from the Bahamas, and we're doing a great job, and all of a sudden, like, two, maybe 3 hours in, our engine stops. So we had a double engine. So he was just running off of one, because he's like, I guess he was trolling. So he didn't have both of them on. So one of the engines dropped. And he says, hey guys, you know, we're going to have to go back in. We're going to have to stop fishing because the other engine, I only have one engine and I don't feel comfortable being out here with just one engine. So we start coming back in, and he was going at a steady pace. And we're 30 minutes into it, and the second engine stopped.
Oh boy.
That ain't good.
It's not even 10 o'clock yet. Like, I mean, it's pretty early. Like, we were, because we started so early. And he's saying he's trying to get on the radio. His radio's not working.
Oh, you got the wrong boat.
Wow.
You telling me?
Whose boat was that? I don't even play out there in the ocean like that.
So his radio's not working. Obviously, our cell phone's not working. I mean, and remember back then, cell phones was really not how it was now. Like, the first smartphones were just coming out back then. So we're sitting on this boat. I mean, now you go to 12 o'clock. All we're doing is sitting on a boat getting seasick. I mean, because it's just drafting, it's going up and down. And then we thought the storm was coming in, and the storm started rocking us. And we couldn't fight the storm because we couldn't get the engines going. So now it's going sideways, it's going back and forth. And the boat wasn't the biggest boat in the world. So we were nervous that we're going to topsize. So now it's like 12 o'clock, and he's messing with the radio, putting cores together. He's able to get on the radio and call Coast Guard. The Coast Guard connected him to a towboat. 4 hours later, the towboat comes and picks us up and then tows us in.
Is Derek's wedding even in your mindset at this point? Like, are you even thinking
I completely forgot about his wedding. Like, I mean, there was a moment I was just worried about
living.
How far can I swim?
Right.
See, maybe you needed Conrad. We don't need to be clowning Conrad.
Right. So we ended up getting in. I mean, it might have been like, I don't know, 11 o'clock at night, 12 o'clock at night. I mean,
damn.
That's a long day, man. Well, imagine being out there with like none of the, like, all we had was like a little light boat. Like a
did
little
you catch any fish, Juan? Did you guys catch any fish?
We did, but I don't even know what happened to those fish.
Least of your worries right there, right?
It might have died.
A lot of tickets.
The fish might have died because we put them in the little swimmer and thing so they could still swim and stay fresh.
Yeah, they would.
That thing wasn't working. None of that was working, right? there's no fresh water, no current going through there, right?
Yeah, Needless to say, you missed the wedding, and we missed having you there.
Yeah, definitely. So,
but Derek's such a good guy. He probably understood.
He was cool about it. I mean, he laughed. I mean, he laughed at me so bad. Like, everybody thought it was funny. I didn't think it was funny.
Right.
You were on the damn boat. I'm sure nobody on the boat thought it was funny.
Well, no. Hey, Juan, it's a good thing you're a God-fearing man, brother. You know what I mean? Because I'm sure your prayers were answered out there.
You know I called on Jesus. Yeah. Hey, I was like, hey, Jesus. And I was like, hey, y'all want to pray with me? Like, we can hold hands and pray this thing out right now.
That's right. No shame in that right there, right? I mean, I mean, I've witnessed it myself, man. You know, I know you all leader in Bible studies and team prayer at midfield, and truly, truly a part of the way you run your life, man. But Tuan, I also know that, you know, some people called you the angry Christian as well. I mean, you talk about, you
know, the angry Christian,
being such a nice guy. What's this angry Christian title? Where's that coming from?
You know, I'm human.
And angry, apparently.
So it kind of started, I think, playing football, because the guys used to tease me all the time. I would run down and I was a wedge breaker. So I would bust a wedge, and Sam Madison used to joke, he's like, he's picking me up off the ground. It's like, yeah, I used to have to run off the field and pick Twan up every play, because he'd go down and knock himself out. So he would help me off. He's like, man, you play the game too angry. So it kind of started there. But really what solidified it, it was during training camp. And back then we still had two-a-days. And we had practice in the morning. And this is an afternoon practice. So when we're in the locker room, somebody was walking through the locker room. Was like, hey, man, hey, this second practice, all that colliding, all that banging, you know, we're gonna brother-in-law today. So I was like, good, because I'm on the scout team. So I'm going against all the off, you know, the starting offensive linemen, and they're like, "Hey, you hear that, Twan?" Because, you know, these always complain I went too hard.
Now someone's like, hey, listening, and they don't know what brother-in-law means.
Right.
Explain that to them.
They were the one telling me brother-in-law.
But if someone's listening to this show now and they're not familiar with that term,
yeah, brother-in-law means that we're gonna take care of one another.
Like, right.
If you're supposed to smash someone, you're gonna run to contact and just do a lot of movement and make it look good on film.
Yeah, I heard that term for the first time in the Pro Bowl. They said that's kind of the move when you get to the Pro Bowl in those practices. They brother-in-law the whole thing.
Me and T-Buck did that on one-on-ones all the time. We brother-in-lawed it. Like I said, T-Buck, I'm about to run a curl route. Don't jump it. Just be there to make the play. All right, I'm running a comeback right here. Don't jump it. And you know, we can be cool. That's the definition of some brother-in-law.
Okay, so the word is out. The brother-in-law is in effect in this second practice.
Brother-in-law is in effect. In the big, who you have to make sure is brother-in-law are the offensive linemen and the linebackers. They have to be all on the same page because they're connecting a lot. Like D-line and O-line, they're always brother-in-law. So that's just their rhythm. But when they rise up, big guys love to hit little guys. So Mark Dixon, I think Mark was playing tackle, if I'm not mistaken. Listen, I think Mark was a tackle. Guard.
He was a guard and a tackle.
He's everything, yeah.
On that year, yeah.
In this play, I think he was playing tackle, and the ball was coming to me, and I had to hit the B gap. So when I was coming to hit the B gap, the end crossed my face, and then Mark swiped him and came up on me. So I'm thinking, I'm ready to brother-in-law. So I come in and I slow down, I get my hands up, I start my movement, and he picks me up and body slams me to the ground. Everybody's like,
big fella.
Okay. So it all comes full circle. So about two or three plays later, they run a similar play. So I'm playing against the Jets right now. I mean, it's me coming downhill, and I put my – and you're not supposed to put your – I know you're not supposed to put your helmet down now, but I put my helmet up under his chin and got up on it and extended, because now he wants the brother-in-law. He embarrassed me already, made himself look good. So now I'm full speed, come underneath him, bam, and I knock him down. And I stayed on him. I laid on him while he was on the ground. And I started going like this. I knew I was in trouble when a man can pick you up and just throw you off.
Dix was a big fella, man. He was
strong, man.
Loved the weight room.
So he like presses me off. So I'm still fighting embarrassment, because this is the second time I'm embarrassed. So now I run up to him and I like do this jump in the air punch. Why am I hitting his helmet? I have no idea.
You did the Superfly Snooker on him?
Something. And I land on him and I'm punching him and I'm going at him and he's punching me. And now the defense comes in. I'm pushing people off, and now it becomes an offensive defensive fight, and people joining in to help me. And it becomes
That's what I'm talking about.
Chaos.
Love it.
And all you can hear in the background is Wanstead saying, hey, y'all need to stop. You know, and then he goes, Twan? That's Twan in the middle of that? Because they broke us up. They broke us up. And then I go rush him again. Like the second time, I go rush him again. I'm throwing punches and we're fighting again. And all you can hear in the back, all I could hear what made me calm down was, that's Twan? And then you hear guys say, yeah, that's the angry Christian.
The angry Christian. I love it.
That's the angry Christian.
Come on, coach. You don't know about the angry Christian? I love it.
It was great, man.
That's great, man.
It stuck.
That's great.
I guess a name like that stuck at that point.
Well, you know, no one really knows.
I wish I knew that. You know, we had Dixon in the tank, who's OJ and I were talking about it recently, one of the greatest quote machines ever, aside from being an incredible ball player. So we might need to get him back to find out about the day he met up with the angry Christian.
I hope he remembers. You know, some you have so many fights. It was a big fight for me because I was on the losing end.
You remember those more than any of them, don't you, Twan? Those L's.
I've had a lot of fights, but usually, you know, I'm winning.
Right.
But when you fight against them big boys, like, it go the wrong direction.
Yeah, there are a lot of people who like to forget him on the basketball court too. We've talked about a lot here. Something else.
He was a hell of an athlete. Hell of an athlete. Yeah.
He was a basketball player.
Oh man, unbelievable. Dunk it, dribble it. Shoot the three. He left my house.
Tell you about it.
He didn't have very many L's on my court, man. I mean, guys were clamoring to play on this squad, man. Dick's one of the best athletes I ever played with.
Never.
Well, I didn't know you had hoop game. I didn't.
That's why I wasn't invited.
I was gonna say. So now I'm going off the rails here, Juice. I remember a practice. Now I shouldn't talk because I'm not very good at this sport. I'm not very good at any sport, but this particular sport. So I think Dave tried to break up training camp one year.
I know exactly where I'm going. I know. I struck
the mush ball.
I mean, who's I struck out in slow pitch
baseball. Mush ball.
I struck out. But there's a story behind that, though. Like, when I was in middle school at Lauderdale Lakes Middle. No, serious. When I was in middle school, I went to the baseball coach. I walked up to him and said, "Hey, coach, I can run and I can catch. I just need you to teach me how to hit." And he looked at me and said, "You see all these guys over there? They can already hit. I don't have time to teach you."
Oh, man.
And I cried and went and ran track. And I'm glad because I ended up winning a state championship. But he said, I don't have time to teach you. And I walked away and I vowed never to play baseball ever again in my life.
And then there came Dave Onstead.
And then I struck out in slow pitch.
I love baseball. That.
I mean, it was horrible.
So here's a professional athlete, decorated athlete from high school, college. He's in the pro. You're playing professional football. How many people in the world get to do that? When Dave handed you that bat, like, what was going on inside?
Yeah, flashbacks to that coach. Yeah.
I didn't have any rhythm. Like I was trying to, I don't know, man. It was embarrassing. Like,
it was bad. It was an ugly swing. Like it was an ugly swing. Yeah, and I don't know if I remember.
Seth, you're killing him, Seth. He's supposed to be a guest on our show, man.
But he's going
to
get me in a second here as well. You know, I waited till the end here. But so here's the thing, Juice. Well, Twan, were you like the last batter for your team? And it was one of those, whoever won practice, something, I don't know.
Tell me it wasn't a big at bat, Twan.
I think it was a big at bat. I think it was a moment. Shame on
you there in the line. It was, if I wasn't the last batter, I was influential while we had to run sprints.
So you can imagine the response, Juice, from his team.
Both sides.
And after that first swing, it was like, whoever was on his squad, you know, they just all the air just left because they were like, "Shh,
Juice, I can't be like you, man, where you can play basketball, baseball, football, soccer.
You don't want to see Juice hit a baseball, man. It'll make you feel worse, Twan.
Man, I tell you, Twan, man, it's a shame that coach stomped on your dreams of being a baseball player
at such an early age. That's a good
point. You know what I mean? Because I'm going to tell you, we need more athletes in baseball. You know, there's only a couple really good athletes in baseball. The rest of them can hit, throw, you know what I mean? But athletes, I mean, I coach baseball. If I had a team full of athletes, you couldn't beat me. You wouldn't be able to beat me. You know what I mean? Because you can't replace that athleticism, that speed, you know, and hitting's the easiest part to teach. It's the easiest part to teach. The other stuff is the hard part.
Well, we'll never find out.
we found out.
Yeah, well, shame on that coach, but maybe he did you a favor because you know running and hitting worked out well for you.
I was
hitting physically, not well.
I mean, I know I didn't play some. I did a lot of Olympic sports. I did hurdles. I ran track, high jump, long jump, triple jump. I mean,
you did okay.
Yeah, I was an Olympic sport guy. I didn't think I was going to play football. In fact, when I was in high school, I wanted to go to the Olympics.
Second guy to say that. Jay Fiedler said the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to go to the Olympics. I was a triple jumper and I was a hurdler. So I went to states three times in both sports. In fact, my senior year, I went to states in five different sports.
There you go, Twan.
Five different events.
So. Well, so Drew said that I should ease up on you a little bit since you're a guest here and I was killing you. So I will flip the script a little bit, Drew. So, you know, again, as we've established earlier here, Twan's a U guy. I went to UF. We're both Broward County guys. There might have been some other personal reasons why there was a little rivalry between the two of us, which we can save for the next episode. However, there was a game. I don't remember which year it is. I've put it out of my mind. You might remember. But UM and UF were going to play. And that was one of those things that didn't happen as often. And we know what happens here in South Florida when those two schools play and how the fans react. And so Tuan and I had a bet. And I don't even know what Tuan would have had to do had he lost. But he didn't lose. And UM beat my Gators down. And I had to wear Tuan's jersey from college. But not just his jersey. I had to wear it to practice. So, you know, Harvey has us buttoned up. We're in ties and slacks out there and the whole thing. And here I come out there to practice. I'm looking at myself in the mirror. And by the way, this is my first time I realized, God, these jerseys are so flipping tight. How do they put pads on the whole thing? And so, like, I'm walking out there, and I have to walk out on the field wearing Tuan's, at this point, 8-9-year-old UM jersey. Tuan was waiting for me. I don't even know if you were going to drills yet. He was waiting for me to come out those doors of the players' lounge. And the last thing you want to do as a PR guy is draw attention to yourself when a football coach is trying to run a practice. Damn it, if the whole team was not interested at that point. So, yeah, so Tuan got me back. You know, that's why I had to have a little fun with him in that baseball
swing. I totally forgot, Steph. You got a great memory. I totally forgot.
I had forgotten about it till you earlier on when you mentioned. So, yeah, I had to – I wish somebody got a picture of it now because it would have been funny. But I felt like 100,000 people were staring at me. Because, again, your whole career as a PR guy, you don't want to be noticed. You make great relationships, but you do not want to impact football in any way. And if Coach lost 3 minutes of his practice because of this bullshit, I'm worried about, you know, where am I going to get sent back? So, but Tuan was basking in all of his U glory as I wore that damn jersey. I should have burned it.
I would have fought you.
You could size. You sized him up. You sized him up.
Your Christian would have come out.
Yeah, and you know what? I probably would have looked at him the way he was looking at Debo if he was coming out. I did not want that smoke.
By that time, I needed a win, you know?
You're looking for a dub. I love it. Well, I would have been probably an easy one for you. I might have been that guy you needed. I won't keep you much longer because I know you got a lot going on. We know you finished your career in Atlanta, which wasn't the best of seasons for anybody. And then you went into retirement. And what I'm always fascinated by now is to see the decisions guys make in retirement and where they go with their careers. And you are one of only a handful of guys, I think of Nat Moore, I think of Troy Drayton, and certainly yourself, who was able to transition into not just, hey, I'm not going to do an appearance for the team, whatever, but you've established quite a career with the franchise. You know, you're one of these guys that is a Dolphin alum that has gone on to really be a part of the management team there. What was that like in decision-making? How did you end up kind of moving into that role?
I'll tell you, I am extremely honored from that standpoint. I remember having a conversation with it was an elementary school fifth grader, and you know, the kid was teasing me. I came to speak to their school, and he's like, "He's not even a starter."
Brutal.
I'm working for the Dolphins. I'm not playing. So, but I was telling him, hey, I played in the NFL. I guess he Googled me and was like, you guys sent me a guy. He wasn't even a starter on the football field. Damn. And my response to him was, you're right. But I'm one of the few guys that were able to play youth football, high school football, college, and the pros, and work for the NFL team all in one, you know, all one after other. And
hometown,
I ended up telling my motivational story about it, and that was talking about how, you know, one thing always led to another. And the way I got my Dolphin job was really the same way I've gotten everything else. So, like, I told you guys about Mike Westhoff, say that he saw me in high school, and he kind of watched me because of my connection from St. Thomas. He knew George Smith, and he wanted me when I came to the Dolphins. Well, when I started working for the Dolphins, Brian Wiedemeyer literally called me on the phone, and by far, he's one of the greatest sports administrators ever. I mean, any sport. I mean, you're talking about a gentleman of the game, a man of integrity, and someone that literally took me under his wing and taught me just business. I knew nothing. I mean, I went from football to working for the Dolphins. I knew nothing. And he literally would have these open sessions with me where I would come to his office, usually late on a Friday, and we would chop it up for an hour. And he would ask me about my week, but then he would help me solve problems. Like, he was very instrumental in helping me understand what to do and not to do. Like one of his best advices was Twan. I told him, I was like, hey, I'm having a problem. And I wrote this email out and I was going to send it. And, you know, would you mind looking at it? And he goes, oh, if you need somebody else to look at it, you probably shouldn't send it.
That advice
was brilliant. You know, it's like, Twan, like, why start a fight that you don't really need to start? He's like, just go talk to the person. Like little things like that, you know, would help me. So the way I got my job is I'm going to meet my wife for lunch. He calls me up and says, Twan, what are you doing right now? I'm going to meet my wife. And he said, hey, do you mind? Can you come in and meet with me for a little bit? And I'm like, sure. So I call my wife and cancel. Anytime a president of any organization calls you to come meet with them, you do it. So I went and met with him. So I went in that back room where back then they used to have the Super Bowl trophies, the big conference table. We're sitting back there and just talking. And it was right next to his office. And we're just kind of talking shop. I mean, we had been there for about 30 minutes. And all he's doing is asking me how my wife and the kids are doing, asking me what am I doing. He never asked me about anything business-wise until the last 5 minutes of the conversation. He goes, would you be interested in working for the Dolphins? It took me by surprise. Like, I never saw it coming. And I was like, I have no idea. Like, what would I be doing? And he goes, I'm not sure. He says, go talk to your wife, think about it, and let me know. So I called him up, and he says, hey, come in. So I told him, and this time I brought a resume because, you know, now I'm like, this is a job. So I brought him a resume. I said, hey, I would be interested. And he says, okay. And we just changed the CEOs. I forget his name. We just changed CEOs at the time. Can't think of his name.
Wonder what. So Brian was in a different position then.
Mm-hmm.
Was it before Mike D, or was Mike D?
It was before Mike D. It was well before Mike D.
I'm trying to think who would have been. So Mr. Ross took over the team. I'm trying to think who that would have been. I don't know. Oh, Joe Bailey. That's Joe Bailey. Joe Bailey.
Yeah. It was right
that's
doing
a whole
that,
other show.
It was right doing that transition. Joe Bailey, all that stuff. So Joe Bailey grabs my resume and says, you like this guy? And Brian's like, yeah. So he looks at my resume and gives it back to him. I didn't know what he thought about me. He walked away. And so Brian says, hey, I really would like you to work for us. He says, think something in the community. He says, go think about what you want to do, write a report and give it to me, and we'll go from there. So I literally wrote everything I wanted to do. I like created this whole department, kind of what we do now, this whole youth programs department. I didn't even know what I was creating. So I think this is where I would want to serve the Dolphins. And when he saw it, he's like, I loved it. Can you do this too? I'm like, yeah, absolutely. So he hired me. I didn't even ask him how much money I was making until like the first week.
You were a complete rookie.
I knew nothing, man. I had no clue. Like, I was playing football.
Yeah.
I had no idea. So probably a year into me working, one of those Friday afternoons, I walked up to Brian. I said, we're sitting at the table. I said, Brian, like, why'd you call me that day? What made you call me? And he says, you know, I watched you. He says, every day after training camp, we had a long day. I had my kids would be by the door getting autographed by all these players. He said, you would walk in every single day and treat them like it was the first time you've ever saw him. He said, you would sign autographs, you would give them gloves, you would give them shoes, you would throw the ball with them. And I said, well, if you can do that for my kids who I knew were annoying, what could you do with kids if you had more resources to do that for kids throughout South Florida? And I was humbled by that. And when I was talking to that young man at the beginning of the story, I said, the kid said, hey, you want a starter? I was able to tell that story. And I said, hey, you know what? Sometimes my journey I could have gone somewhere where I could have potentially been a starter maybe or had a better football career. But my journey has allowed me to be here with the Dolphins. And even though from a football standpoint, I would never go to the Hall of Fame, I would never be considered a starting linebacker, I've had a great opportunity to serve my community, provide for my family, and honestly be used by God, be the person that I think God has designed me to be. And that's to work with children, to serve South Florida. And I'm honored every single day to be able to work for an organization like the Miami Dolphins, who's given me that platform. And regardless of CEO and regardless of who my supervisor is, no one has taken that ability away from me to be able to serve. And that's the one thing I've always been proud about the Dolphins, that regardless of who they bring in from a leadership standpoint, each one of those people, they do it in different ways, but each one of those people have a heart of service. And I've been honored to be a part of that for over 15 years now. And I'm blessed to be one of the few guys to be able to play their football career here and work for the organization to be using that capacity.
That's awesome, that's man. Awesome. I'm glad your meeting with Brian went a lot better than mine did.
Yeah. Yeah. You got it. Now you have to download the DJ Preach, the Who is DJ Preach episode, and you'll.
I'm doing that today.
You definitely got to listen to that one. But no, I mean, you're right. Brian, brilliant man. I mean, true, everybody on this show has had a different interaction with Brian. But he literally worked almost every position you could work for a football franchise, starting as carrying towels and water. And worked his way up to be the CEO. So may he rest in peace. And
yeah.
And it's really cool to hear stories of folks he's impacted and how you've been able to pay it forward. And again, speaking of which, phone's probably going to ring. Somebody's going to need something for you, the team. So we don't want to take up any more of your time. But I appreciate you spending time because I made a joke about it. But Twan had gone back to school again, OJ, and got another degree that's probably hanging somewhere in that office.
Yeah. Yeah,
and he continues to try and serve. He continues to try and better himself, and it's impressive, regardless of how much we might give each other a hard time when we do see each other, man. So I really do appreciate you giving us some time here in the tank.
No, thank you very much. And only thing I would add to that is that I don't have any degrees hanging, and that's for a reason. The one thing I've learned from football, you always have to be a continuous learner, and I think when you hang the degree up, it's too much of a milestone to keep going forward. So if I don't have it hanging, I always feel like I need to put something up there. So I'm always working to figure out, okay, can I get another degree?
Like
can
I that.
Get something. So you know, like real, I don't hang them up too often.
That's what's up.
Now, football stuff I hang up because there's no way I'm ever going to play football.
It's done.
That's final.
Good thing I didn't burn that jersey. Aside from the beating I would have taken. Good stuff, man.
Hey, thanks for diving in, Twan.
Hey, thank you, guys. I appreciate it.